Does your ass smell? Do you want to feel fresh and clean all day long? Of course you do. That's why you need soap. Soap is specifically formulated to gently clean, leaving you feeling refreshed and confident. Washing your ass with soap provides more than just a clean feeling. It helps to maintain good hygiene and can even reduce the risk of skin irritation and infection. Soap, the simple solution for a clean and refreshed ass. Try it today and feel the difference. Soap, available wherever they sell soap.
Holy shit. You'll never guess where I just was, Will.
Where were you, Kevin?
I was at last week's episode.
Whoa! Hang on a second. I think I met you. Oh, wow. So it's you.
Yeah, it is me. Fucking hell. Wouldn't believe it.
Are you okay? How did you get back there as well? I want to know.
I got shot in the arse.
By Podbot.
I did, yeah.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello. And welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host Will, a writer of three films plus a Christmas special, and I'm joined once again by my co-host and writer of one and a bit films and three and a bit episodes of TV, Kevin. Kevin Lehan, how are you? He's gone to sleep.
I'm Kevin, good, wake up. Will.
God,
I was just trying to scare you that there was a delay.
God damn it, Kevin.
Oh, God.
We're back, Kevin. We're back to tackle the topic of...
We've never left.
We're just stuck here the whole time. That's my problem. That is my problem.
We're back. We're back and we're doing the episode that we planned to do last week. So this means that we've done twice as much research and this is going to be an amazing episode. Our best yet.
We were ready to fire this gun last week, and at the last minute it was pulled away from us. So either we have done twice as much research, or all the research we did last week has just dissipated, and now is just all those popping electrons have just, you know, shot out my ear. And
you just said to me an hour ago, you made your pick, and I realized, oh shit, I better pick something. So that's where my head is at.
So this week's topic is best one night in the big city, right? And like we've been doing in a couple episodes recently, we thought it might be... We knew there was someone out there who could help us, and we've pulled in another very special guest co-host. And our very special guest co-host is a writer, but also a director of four feature films, including Level Up from 2016... My Boy from 2017, I See You in 2019, and this week's topic plays right into his most recent feature, which is just out on Netflix, Night Teeth. And that director is...
It's out tonight?
Tonight, oh my God, get your teeth into it.
Adam, or today.
Today, I think.
We need to name you. Adam Randall, thank you for joining us. So great
thank
to have you.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you very
also,
much.
Also, I just want to say one thing to correct the record. Adam's not a writer. I wouldn't be friends with him if he was a writer.
I've written, Kevin. I've written some beautiful work. Some poetry.
You're a writer.
All right, we'll give it to you. You write lovely text messages.
Thank you. Thank you.
Adam, I've seen Night Teeth, and it is class. It is so slick, and it is so stylish, and it is... can you give us a very brief synopsis of what Night Teeth actually is?
Sure. So Night Teeth is set in LA, and it's about a young guy, college student, who lives in Boyle Heights, which is in East LA. And one night he persuades his brother to let him drive his limo for the night and pick up two girls from Beverly Hills and take them across LA to a number of different parties over the night. And it very quickly transpires that you probably guessed from the title that things go wrong in a supernatural way. And it's very much a kind of one crazy night seen through the eyes of this young guy.
That'll do, I suppose.
Yeah. is that not good enough, Kevin?
Oh, that's very good.
I'll sell it for you. It's okay. It's a sexy, exciting, cool.
Imagine if I said that.
Yeah, I suppose that would be a bit ick. No, it's a really cracking film. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, as soon as this topic came up, I was like, oh yeah, perfect. Let's get Adam on. And yeah, I wanted to know, you know, because we were doing this episode, were there any sort of films that inspired you to with it? Were there any films that you looked to and thought, I'd love to match that tone, or I'd love to stay away from those tropes?
There was like a lot of different films, elements of different films that came together. You know, the first film that came into my head when I read it was Go. Do you remember Go from the 90s? Doug Liman film.
So what are you up to tonight?
We're going to this party tonight, this warehouse thing.
Some sort of rave thing.
Is this going to be cool?
Yeah, I guess.
Does the British guy still work here?
That was that kind of energy and mayhem. And that's also, you know, I don't know if it's one night in LA or over a weekend in LA, but
they go to Vegas at some point.
There's a Vegas story, yeah.
Yeah.
So there was that. There was, you know, I don't think it's a twist to say that there's vampires in this film. I think it's probably
what the
Oh no, what? I've ruined it. You know, it was a twist. It was supposed to be a reveal, but we realized very early on not to do that. So it's in the trailer and the poster and the
So
the
wait,
first
is it called Night Teeth? I thought it was Nighty.
if only I fought for that. So I looked at, you know, Lost Boys and Near Dark and those. I mean, I guess Lost Boys is perhaps the thing it's closest to in terms of it being very youthful and very fun and a little bit silly.
That's exactly the vibe I was getting from it. Lost Boys, that was just for, it was echoing, and I haven't seen Lost Boys in a long time, but there is a fun, creepy energy that you capture, and it's definitely there.
You needed more sax, man.
Sex or sax?
Sax, man. Sax, man. Sax, man. Like, playing the saxophone and
yeah, he's great. Yeah, yeah. I actually talked about if we could get him to cameo, but that didn't work out.
He's probably in prison.
And then, you know, I mean, we'll talk about these films, I'm sure, later on, but there was, you know, Warriors was a big thing. After Hours, I asked everyone who was working on the film to watch. You know, there's different elements. Obviously, it's not quite like that, but there's things about being sort of trapped in the city over the one night.
Yeah, there's a ton of movies that sort of fit into this category. Like, when it came up, I thought, well, I can think of a handful. And then when I was, like, because I thought I was doing this episode last week, I was making my list of, like, movies that have taken place in different cities, and there's dozens of them.
Yeah. In fact, probably the key one that was pitched to me before I read the script, someone said, this film is Collateral with vampires. And you think, different tonally, but in terms of the structure of it, it is, you know, similar.
Huh.
When I started to look at the Night Teeth included, at a lot of these films that it's set in one night in the big city, there was a kind of a commonality, even when you cross genres, there's a commonality in its kind of like story makeup, in that there's a very Grecian kind of archetype at play here, where you have characters who feel like they're being taken into the underworld, who are kind of out of their depth and don't have control of the story, and are being guided by more powerful godlike beings, or being swept down mysterious avenues into mysterious places, sometimes dangerous, just or eerie or mysterious or just unexpected. And they all have that sense of characters kind of out of control. You know, I'm thinking of, like, After Hours is going to be one I'm going to talk about later on, but, you know, that's a kind of like quintessential one, where we've got Griffin Dunne, I think, is the Scorsese's film from 85.
Yeah.
And he just has just like ping-ponged around, you know, the Tribeca area of New York for a whole night. Like, it's mad.
They're sort of like road trip movies if the road was just the road to hell.
Yeah.
It's got that picaresque structure, and you're just bumping up against strangers because, like, you're usually lost, or you're trying to get home. And, I sort of comparison there.
And they're on the whole, whether they're comedies or thrillers, unbelievably intense and stressful viewing experiences.
Frustrating.
Yeah, I watched recently The Out of Towners.
Hank, is that a beautiful city, or is that a beautiful city?
Oh, that's a beautiful city.
George, they can't find the bag.
They lost our luggage!
Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis are the out-of-towners in Neil Simon's outrageous comedy about New York City.
Oh,
you know, which is a straight-up comedy, very silly. But again, it's got this... I was watching it and I was thinking about Uncut Gems and the similarities in terms of just how busy every frame is and how there's just constant noise. There's always people in the way of our protagonist trying to just get through a train, get through the streets... Everything. I was watching it with my wife and she said, where's the fun in this experience? You know, how am I supposed to feel? It's so stressful.
I'm with her. I wanted to strangle Jack Lemmon in that film. He was just, films are fun and all that, but oh my God, he was so irritating. He just would not stop rabbiting on and complaining. And I just thought, you know, fuck yeah, shut up. But yeah, that's probably one of the earliest versions of this genre. It probably, you know, when they were doing After Hours and the films of the 80s where a lot of these sort of films were made, I bet they were referencing the out-of-towners in their lookbooks if they were doing them back then.
There's something about the depiction of the city as well in the 80s. When I grew up, you know, I grew up in London and the idea of, especially New York.
Fucking hell.
Grew up in London. The idea of New York and Chicago and a little bit LA, you know, they were so kind of exciting and terrifying the way they were depicted. Even in like fun movies, even in like Ninja Turtles or I know the original Batman is Gotham, but it very much feels like New York. And I remember being...
You thought you were Batman going into the city, did you?
I remember going to New York for the first time when I was like 8 on holiday and being mildly terrified that my parents were just going to get stabbed in a random alleyway, you know, because that was the impression that I'd got, that there was just danger everywhere. It was out of control. And it was really exciting. And even Big Trouble in Little China is another one where just, you know, I still go to Chinatown and feel like behind the door, there's just something, you know, some other world back there, you know.
There's a big 9-foot baboon wolf.
I had an experience and it was... I basically had an after-hours experience in New York one night, and it was one of it was which actually a listener of the show, Declan Daly. Declan, if you're listening, how are you doing? Declan Daly's he's from New Jersey, but he took myself and my wife out one night in New York, where we literally were bounced around the city. We had we were just thrown into cabs. We were in a cab, then we're in a car. We're in these speakeasies and hidden clubs and all that sort of stuff. But the only thing about it is we definitely felt out of control, but we didn't have the experience that Griffin Dunne had in afterwards, where he was just completely out of control and he just wanted to get home and the community were just turning on him, and everywhere we went, things just got worse and worse and worse. But I remember having that experience where once you go deeper into the night, the kind of the control or the rules of the daytime seem completely detached from the world that you were. You feel like you're in a different world, even though it's the same streets and it's the same, locations and whatnot. But just the shadow of night and the dead of night it feels like you've detached from reality. And I love that. That's a kind of like a through line through all these films. I love that. I really do love it.
Yeah.
Have any of you seen a film called Victoria?
I haven't.
Yes.
I just watched that just recently, and it is it should have come up actually, Will, in our single take episode, because the whole movie takes place, it's one continuous shot, no edits, and it follows this Spanish girl who's leaving a club, and she bumps into four guys who are denied access to the club, and she starts, you know, striking up a conversation with them, starts flirting with one of the guys, and the four of them turn out to be criminals waiting orders to carry out I suppose it wouldn't be a spoiler to say that to carry out a bank heist, and she gets roped up in it. But it's an excellent film. It's so exciting.
Yeah, it's incredible. I thought what was really interesting about it was the first 40 minutes or something, you're just hanging out, and it really captures that feeling, which I don't have anymore because I'm too old now, that I used to have, of just being drunk in the city and anything can kind of happen, you know, where, you know, that sort of youthful, you're out, it's after a club, it's 4 a.m, you know, it's that weird limbo when it's really quiet. And it's just, you're sort of moments away from something going horribly wrong, which, you know, but there's also this absolute freedom, and they're just hanging out, and it's such a pleasure to hang out. And you don't actually know where the story's going to go for a long time. You're just hanging out with them, and then suddenly it turns about, I don't know, 40 minutes in or something, and then it's just incredibly
tense. Logistics of trying to pull that off. Yeah, I don't know how they managed to make that.
And it was actually one take. You know, a lot of these things aren't. Wow. You know, they pretend to be, but this was actually one. They did it three times, The third time is what they use.
They shot it traditionally as well as sort of a backup. So I guess they managed to pull it off, obviously, because it's in the film. But yeah, they shot it traditionally and they rehearsed for weeks. But there's a moment in it, which I didn't notice, but I suppose people that have looked into it pointed out, where she goes down the wrong street and they just roll with it and they just keep, you know, staying in character and making it work for the scene. But I was like thinking, well, how does that work with all the extras and the timings and what
have
you? But yeah, it seems to have been the film that a lot of people had seen, but I only just caught it this week and I thought it was fantastic. So that's definitely one to watch for single take and for One Night in the Big City, because it's set in Berlin.
Gotta see it. I have to see that bloody film. There's
and
I love what you were describing there, that moment Adam, about, you know, these adventures. That's, I'm the same as you. Classically, these moments have happened after consuming a lot of alcohol. But I also love the encounters you have with people who you just meet in those wee hours as well. And, you know, you're meeting them in that space and they're meeting you in that space. And they feel like they come from another world as well, because they're more than likely drunk like you too. So you've no other context except for this person in this state at night. And sometimes you have the most amazing encounters with people at night, not just getting mugged. And I think you see that littered in these films.
Yeah.
I remember being out with Dan Martin, actually, who guested on this podcast in season one, and another one of our listeners, Jonas Govarts. And I was in a bit of a blackout, and I didn't realise until I couldn't remember leaving the bar and ending up back at Jonas's house. But there was a gang of us heading back, and we bumped into what turned out to be a homeless guy at the bus stop. And for some reason, he hugged me, but it was like a really aggressive, hard hug where I just felt all my ribs just crack. And I thought, what the fuck? This is, I'm too old for this shit. But that was one of my after hours encounters.
Can I steer you into, because I want to get it out the way. I want to get it out the way because I know I want to get there before anyone brings it up, right? Can I talk about my pick right now? And I'm going to get it.
You can do whatever you want. You're running the show.
Well, I'm just going to do it because I feel if I don't talk about it, no, I won't get it out. And you're talking about meeting people. We're talking about these late night encounters. And my pick for this topic has to be Before Sunrise.
All right, I have an admittedly insane idea, but if I don't ask you this, it's just going to haunt me the rest of my life. I have no idea what your situation is, but I feel like we have some kind of connection, right?
Yeah, me too.
Great. So listen, here's the deal. This is what we should do. You should get off the train with me here in Vienna and come check out the town. We just got into Vienna today, and we're looking for something fun to do.
Sprechen Sie English?
Yeah, of course. Could you speak German for a change?
Now I'm going to call my best friend in Paris, who I'm supposed to have lunch with in 8 hours. Okay.
Okay.
Ring, ring. Pick up the phone.
Hello?
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it for lunch today. I'm sorry. I met a guy on the train and I got off with him in Vienna. We're still there.
Are you crazy?
Probably.
And the reason I'm picking that, so it came out, well, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this knows what Before Sunrise is. It came out in 1995.
I bet I know what scene you're going to go with as well, but keep going.
Yeah, I surprised. I didn't go with the one that I thought it was going to go with. It came out in 1995, directed by Richard Linklater and co-written by, oh God, the lady Kim...
Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy.
Well, they didn't get credit in the first one. It was Kim Krasan and Richard Linklater were the credit writers, but Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy kind of should have been credited in the first feature as well. And I think they were all four of them were credited in the following two films. Because it's so improvised, it was improvised and rehearsed and whatnot. But it's basically about these two kids And Ethan Hawke has got one of those Europass. He's an American student. He's got a Europass ticket, and he's on a train across Europe. And he bumps into Julie Delpy on the train and says, you know, they have this strike up immediately an engaged conversation. There obviously is a connection between the two of them. And he says to her, listen, I'm getting a flight here in Vienna in the morning. Why don't you just get off with me? And she goes, yeah, why not? And so the whole film is just about them getting to know each other and kind of dueling with each other.
That's a good way to put it.
And I think it's a doomed relationship from watching that, you know, watching these characters interacting now, because they are kind of in conflict at times. They are kind of like, you know, challenging each other constantly. But what I loved about it was that when they first meet on the train, they're both young intellectuals, and they're trying to kind of like figure out their philosophies in the world. And he's reading about a book about Klaus Kinski, and she's reading a book about death. I don't know, can't remember the title. But they immediately engage in this kind of like deep philosophical conversation. And honestly, on my rewatching of it this weekend, my eyes kind of rolled a little bit listening to him, because I kind of went, oh, this is such a young person's conversation. You know, that, you know, you're trying to, I know what they're doing. They're trying to, you know, establish your own philosophies in the world. But what I found really interesting about the film is that as the film starts in daytime, but as it transitions into nighttime, those conversations stay the same. But all of a sudden, I felt more accepting of them, because those conversations seem to happen at nighttime, and it felt in the right place, yeah, in the right context. And
the witching hour conversations.
It really was. And all of a sudden, when those characters were having those conversations in the dead of night, and there's mysterious kind of characters like a palm reader was coming up to them and kind of reading their palm, all of a sudden I kind of went, no, this feels natural and feels right for this place in the story.
I think I'm afraid of death 24 hours a day. I swear. That's why I'm in a train right now. I could have flown to Paris, but I'm too scared.
Okay.
I can't help it. I know the statistics say, it's safer, whatever. When I'm in a plane, I can see it. I can see the explosion. I can see me falling through the clouds. And I'm so scared of this few seconds of consciousness before you're going to die. You know, when you know for sure you're going to die.
So the scene I'm going for, right, is not at night, but in the morning time, right? And it's the first time we see the film basically doesn't feature either of the characters. And it is the moment where the characters have left the story, and it's the very end of the film. And the camera shows us the locations where they've been, and the camera's in the exact same spot, only now it's daytime. And you see real life kind of coming in, this people cleaning the streets, and you see an old lady walking by the grass, and their wine bottle is where it was. And I just felt it was so, it captured the magic of a one night in a city, that feeling you get one night in the city, where it's so transient and it's so fleeting. And in the morning, everything will be swept up and real life will resume. And there's a moment before they leave where the daytime is kicked in and they're talking to each other, and he says,
what do you think's the first thing you're going to do when you get back to Paris?
Call my parents. What about you?
I don't know. I'll probably go pick up my dog. He's staying with a friend of mine.
You have a dog?
Yeah.
I love dogs.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
What?
Oh, I don't know. We're back in real time.
I know, I hate that.
What is that? It
sounds like a harpsichord.
Oh, check that out.
And they both acknowledge we've left the magic space. Yeah. We've left that time. We've left the big night. And it's and I love that moment. I just thought it was such a beautiful, a bittersweet moment to end this film, which is a really beautiful and gorgeous film. So that's my pick.
That's a great pick. It's for me, you know, I used to be a backpacker and traveling and stuff. Some of the most beautiful places I've been to were actually some of the dullest, because the people I was with weren't the one that was bringing the color to those moments. And then, you know, moments where you're stuck in an airport in the middle of a downpour and it's 4 a.m. and it's some of the most fun you've ever had in your life because of the people that you're with.
Men are lucky we don't bite off their head after mating. Certain insects do that, you know, like spiders and stuff. Mm-hmm. We at least let you live.
So I said earlier on that there are, you know, these films tend to almost be like travelogues for different cities. And a lot of cities have sort of hosted these descents into madness. And I made a list, and I was going to sort of mention a few of them here and see if they spark any thoughts within you. But you've got, like, we've mentioned Collateral, and that took place in Los Angeles. You've also got License to Drive, which I just watched for this episode. And it takes a while to get into the whole madness of Corey Haim and Heather Graham sort of dossing around LA in his dad's stolen car. But once it does, it's a class cracker of an 80s comedy.
It's like a sign. A sign from the big Mr. Goodwrench in the sky.
Will Les get the car home in one piece? Will his father leave Les in one piece?
You are damn lucky your mother didn't go into labor.
No, Robert! I am in labor!
What?
License to Drive.
Does it have a happy ending?
Really? Yeah, it's great fun.
I don't think I've ever
seen it. It's really good. It takes, as I say, 45 minutes to get into it. But it's got that sort of weird science vibe. It's the same sort of wackiness. And it's a bit like Adventures in Babysitting, which takes place in Chicago.
Yeah, I watched that recently.
Which is another one that... I really like that film. I think it's good. Yeah. Is it Chris Columbus's first movie? I think it is.
I don't know if it's his first. It's an interesting film. It hasn't aged brilliantly. There's things about it that I think...
In what respect?
Well, it's part of that sort of 80s, safe in the suburbs, the city is terrifying, you know, and it's and like, you know, so they go into the city and it's just full of crime and poverty and homelessness, and they just have to eventually get back to the safety of their big suburban houses, you know.
But then Chicago in the 80s, I imagine it was there was some dodgy streets you could go down there, because they've got like a massive murder rate.
Yeah.
Come to Chicago, the Windy City.
That was an iconic one from my childhood adventure, because I think it, you know, was one of those few films I could rent. So I saw that loads when I was a kid and really enjoyed it. I was going to show it to my kids recently, and I started it and I just went, nah, might be a bit too young yet, because there's Playboys involved. I think even in the first couple of scenes there's Playboy, and I went, you know what? I'll wait till my kid's, you know, 9 before I show him a film featuring Playboy. Give him a little bit of time before that comes.
Meet Chris Park, getting ready for the greatest night of her life.
Hi.
I gotta cancel.
Now she's stuck babysitting the Anderson kids. Sarah.
Mom got Chris to babysit for me.
Chris?
Her brother Brad and his best friend Gal.
Who is this kid?
Stray dog.
Take good care of my baby. I'll guard her with my life.
What could possibly go wrong?
Chris, I'm in trouble.
Sit down. I'll be there in half an hour.
You've also got Judgment Night, which takes place in Chicago. The Stephen Hopkins film.
Is that the one with... Is that Emilio Estevez? Is that
Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Stephen Dorff, and a really, really obnoxious and irritating Jeremy Piven.
The weird thing, Jeremy Piven's has got younger. He's Benjamin Button.
Well, that's his hair transplant.
That obviously, like, most famously had the most incredible soundtrack. I don't know if you remember that soundtrack.
It does have a cracking soundtrack, but it's, oh my God, that's one of those films where, well, first of all, I love that kind of muscular action film. But they do a thing which a lot of bad horror movies do, which is you put a group of characters in a stressful situation and they all turn on each other immediately and they just don't let up. They just keep screaming, arguing. And that is how conflict is put across. And it's just... I just end up like watching those films and just thinking, would you guys shut the fuck up and just communicate? Stop fucking going to level 10 on everything. It's...
Yeah, it's, that's another...
It's a very screamy film.
Yeah, and Chicago being terrifying. I mean, it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? It's just...
Not really when it's Dennis Leary is the bad guy.
Yeah, keeps doing monologues, if I remember.
He does. He keeps doing stand-up sets, and you just think, like, it's not too bad.
Don't move! Don't whisper! Don't even breathe!
Guys, don't give up.
Oh, Frank, is this your wife, huh?
I get a wife and a little girl, and I will get back to them tonight.
Let's show these punks what we got.
You better believe it.
You're just another victim. You're just another victim, kid.
Hey!
You're just another victim.
There's one I watched as well recently that not many people have seen, but it's It's set in Atlantic City, and it's called Run, and it's got Kelly Preston and Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, and it's, I don't think I've seen this.
Patrick Dempsey has to... I watched it a week ago, and I've already forgot what it was. He has to take a car to Atlantic City, and he ends up getting, as so many of these guys do, he ends up crossing the mob. He gets into a bar fight, and he accidentally kills one of the main gangster's sons, and that guy has to run out of the city with the cops in his pocket and everything, and they all start hunting him down, and it's got a budget, and it's a class film, but no one has heard of it, or no one's seen it, but it's all on YouTube. You can watch it right now. You know, pirate it right now.
Charlie Farrow is a college kid just visiting Sawtucket.
You a gambler, man?
Life is a gamble, man.
He thought it was his lucky day.
All right.
But now he's winning big from the wrong guy. Matt Halloran's son.
You better get out of here while you still got the chance. Denny can get real crazy. Denny, stop!
You stay out of this.
Why isn't anybody doing anything?
Look, now there are witnesses. Call the police!
Better run, Charlie.
What Adam was saying earlier on, because of films, I just assume if I go out after a certain hour in a big city, I'm just going to end up running into the mob or being sold into, you know, as a human trafficked.
Well, they are from Cork.
Another good one, Kevin, to mention is Good Time, more recent, the Safdie brothers, Good Time.
Yeah. I was going to get to that.
God,
that's an incredible film. And again, like Uncut Gems, just so intense. Yeah. And when I was thinking about what scene, I didn't go for this scene, but it was very tempting, was when they go to the fairground and they've got that liter bottle of acid. Do you remember that? That plastic bottle of acid,
yeah.
Which if you've ever done acid, is the most terrifying sight. You know, the thought of this bottle of acid, and then they pour it, you know, in the security guard's mouth, and it's just absolutely horrendous.
Is that fairground, it's not open, is it?
It's Coney Island, isn't it?
It's closed in the movie.
It's closed, you know, yeah. It's like 2 a.m. or something, and the security guard's hunting them down.
You know what I noticed about Good Time, and apparently a lot of films have done it, but when I was watching it, I thought, wait, what? Is the opening credits start about 22 minutes into the film.
No way.
Yeah, so it just keeps going and going, and then the opening credits happen. It's got a really long pre-title sequence.
It grabs you from the get-go, and you're invested in these characters, even though they're essentially lowlights, you know, but you really are engaged and invested in, like, you know, their story, and you kind of want them to survive. And am I right in saying that one of the Safdie brothers plays
the brother, yeah. Does. Amazing performance, yeah.
Yeah.
So I told you about my brother, yeah?
Something happened. I don't know exactly what. He's been arrested. He's being held at Rikers Island.
Love?
Oh my God, that's awful.
Make me clean.
Just gotta get him out of there before something bad happens. He could get killed in there.
The pure's out from love. Damned all is out.
You need another 10 grand. You get another 10 grand, your brother will get out.
The truth is an act of love.
Something very important is happening, and it's deeply connected to my purpose.
Every day.
And Robert Pattinson's fantastic in it, and they're really, really, really strong filmmakers. And I haven't seen Uncut Gems.
I loved Uncut. It's one of the last films I saw at the cinema before COVID hit, and a couple of people walked out because there was a couple of old people, because it's such an intense experience. It's not pleasurable. It's amazing. I think it's an absolute masterpiece. But it's a you know, heart palpitations kind of.
They might have gone in looking for the latest Adam Sandler romp.
Can I have a theory on this, and mine is that it's not stressful, it's unpleasant. So I found the soundtrack really irritating and obnoxious. So I'm one of the few people that really just didn't get into that film as much as everyone else. I just wanted them to turn down that fucking music, this discordant, weird, distorted electronic score. And everybody else loved it, but I was like, this is so... it's not my speed.
Yeah.
How you doing, Holly? How's it going? How are you?
Good Pesach out.
All right, Larry, you're a Jew again. Welcome back.
made a crazy risk, a gamble. And it's about to pay off.
So I want the Celtics to cover. I want the Celtics halftime. I want Garnett points and rebounds.
What do you know?
I don't know. I just know.
Well, I'll tell you what I know. That's the dumbest fucking bet I ever heard of.
I disagree, Gary.
I want to ask Adam a question. You were talking about earlier on about how it feels like you can kind of compare these to road movies. And like in road movies, these night movies, are the locations are so important for these stories. So for Adam, for you, when you were thinking about Night Teeth, obviously there were locations were in the script, but was that how much effort went into actually, you know, considering locations? Because they are quite distinct in Night Teeth.
Sure. Know,
they really do. There's particularly the one with all those flowers. That was amazing. I love that.
That was interesting. Just a little thing on that is that we ordered, I went to this light show and saw these flowers and just thought this would be amazing for someone because it's sort of tacky and expensive, you know, which is sort of perfect summation, really, that, you know, a lot of money and not that much taste to have, a whole field of plastic flowers. So I thought it'd be really fun. And then that was the first time I heard about COVID because we ordered them from China and they wouldn't arrive. And we were like, this bloody COVID, you know, what a pain in the ass. Did we know. But the locations were hugely important. One of the most important things about the film, I think, because it's like a tour of LA. And there were a number of them in the script, but actually changed some of them so that it felt a little bit more like a road trip. Like, we never went to Venice initially in the script. And, you know, I just wanted to explore each area. I'd been in LA for a little while, and I'd been looking around all the neighborhoods when I was looking where to live. So I'd sort of done this tour. And each neighborhood in LA is like a little town. You know, it's very different, you know, to most cities in that it's like a number of small towns, each with their own personalities. And so I really wanted to capture that. And so I got the script of Night Teeth and I was so excited to make this film in LA. And then actually we ended up shooting 75% of it in New Orleans.
No way.
New Orleans.
Yeah, as you do in these movies. So that specific...
Oh my God.
So that specific moment that you're talking about with the red flowers, that's a house in New Orleans, not Bel Air.
But you know what I loved about that moment? What I loved about that moment was like, how else can a vampire appreciate a garden? Unless it was illuminated.
Oh, that's a good point. So
yeah, and I went, that's what blew me away. I just went, I've never, it's a stunning visual. It's a really stunning, and this road that winds up to it, and it's really stunning. And I just went, oh, it really struck me. And it was,
it's a crazy house, that one. I mean, you know, it's got the tennis courts and the swimming pool. Yeah. But then actually what you don't see is that it backs onto a massive lake, which has got, you know, alligators. Because we're actually in Louisiana, but you don't see it, which is one of the benefits of shooting at night.
Oh, wow.
What was it like shooting, the film is almost exclusively set at night. So what was it like shooting night shoots for week after week after week?
I like night shoots. I like night shoots for the reason that we've been talking about of the madness of the kind of city at night. And I think it's just you and the crew and the cast in your little bubble, you know, and everyone else is asleep. And there's just a strange vibe to it in that you're up when everybody else isn't and you're making something. And I mean, I've always been absolutely awful in the mornings anyway, so I'd much rather be working till 5 in the morning than getting up at 5 in the morning.
I don't think I've ever met anybody like you.
What?
What is wrong with you?
Can't be alive for 200 years and not go a little crazy.
So my pick, as I said, I was trying to sort of like wrap my head around it, the weird thing about this genre is that it's sort of the totality of the experience. It is that sort of road trip thing, and the scenes are usually built around some sort of frustration or some sort of obstacle, so you don't really get that cathartic sort of, you know, punchy moment where it's like, that's a great scene. It's usually a stepping stone onto the next scene, and for that reason it's sort of difficult to sort of pick out one moment. But I went with After Hours.
Why don't you just go home?
I've been asking myself that one all night long.
So what happened? Why can't you?
I met this girl tonight, okay, in a coffee shop.
I feel like something incredible is really going to happen here.
So when I got home, I gave her a call. On the cab on the way down here, all my money flew out the window. I didn't really get along with her that well.
What's the matter?
I said, I want to see a plaster of Paris bagel and cream cheese paperweight. Now cough it up. So I left.
Kiki!
So I haven't got enough money to get home until I meet this bartender who wanted to lend me the money.
That's all right. That's all right. Get it. That's all right.
Good boy.
So I go back to the girl's apartment, but her roommate's really pissed off at me for the way I treated her friend.
This the guy?
Hi. So I march right in there to apologize.
Come on!
But she'd already killed herself. I was too late.
Oh, wow.
Lighten up. What is this?
Because I think it is the best of that whole genre. And there are so many that came after it. Even though John Landis did his own version of After Hours on the same year, in 1985, Into the Night. I don't know if either of you have seen that. It's with Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer. And they're, you know, knocking about Los Angeles, and he's sort of, I think he's an engineer. He's an insomniac engineer, and he crosses paths with Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's interesting to compare the two, because one is sort of a knockabout, farcical screwball comedy, and the other one is quite subtextual, and there's really interesting themes going on in Scorsese's After Hours, where it is his, well, I suppose because he references it so much in the movie, I think people are able to draw that comparison. But it is almost his take on Wizard of Oz.
Ah, yeah, okay.
There's so many references to the film, and then when you look at it and you realise that all the women, a lot of the women characters are wearing yellow, and there's all these sort of like hallmarks of the Wizard of Oz, where him in the taxi, he's being, you know, knocked about like he's in a tornado, and he loses his money, he flies out the window, and when you read it from that perspective, it's an interesting sort of like companion film to it. But there's also what I think sort of the story of a guy who's in a humdrum 9-to-5 job, and he goes out into the world and he realizes the value of living a more unconventional life, and realizing how much money, I suppose, is the cause of all his problems, and how there are some people who are just not living in the same world that he is, where art is more important. And you've got a guy that's like, there's a moment in it in the beginning where he's talking to Bronzo Pinchot, and he's sort of like obsessively looking at these stacks of notepaper. And Bronson Pinchot is sort of saying he hates this job that he's just taking on, where he's, Griffin Dunne is training him up.
Good. Yeah, you got it. Another week, you'll have it down.
It's temporary anyway. I said it's temporary anyway. I do not intend to be stuck doing this for the rest of my life. Don't tell Mr. Dittman that I said that, please.
Okay.
Because what I really want to do is, I'd really like to get into publishing. You know, there just aren't any openings right now, but what I would love to do is just create a magazine, my own magazine, which would be like a forum for writers and intellectuals who can't get into print anywhere else.
And they have this cutaway where he's just looking at all these stacks of paper, and he's sort of like reassessing his life. And then he meets all these characters who are using papier-mâché in artistic ways. And when you sort of watch how the film plays out and how he ends up back at the office at the start of the movie, where he's encased in papier-mâché, it's interesting to me, I think. There's more going on. But the scene that I really like in that film, and it's a very brief one, but it's when he gets caught in the downpour, and he goes to the subway, and he tries to get on the train, and the subway, what would you call him? The ticket toll guy won't let him on because he's short about 50 cent. And he's like, who will know? And the guy is like,
really coming down, huh? Oh, well, you bet. There you go. Fare is $1.50.
What?
Fare went up to $1.50 as of midnight.
You're kidding. I've got 97 cents.
No.
It's raining like mad out there.
No.
Would you just give me a break? I really just want to go home.
I'm sorry. I can't do that. I could lose my job.
Who would know, exactly?
I could go to a party, get drunk, talk to someone. Who knows?
Would you just give me a goddamn token?
No, goddammit, I cannot give you a token. Those tokens are a dollar and a half. I can't sell for 97 cents. We lose money that way.
All right, there's a train. There's a train. Come on, give me a token. Come on.
It's just one of those small little moments where it's funny, it's frustrating, and you can relate to it so much of just being caught in one of those predicaments. So I went with After Hours.
You know what I love about that? First of all, it's probably my favourite of all of these films, After Hours. I absolutely love it. That particular scene when he realises he can't get the ticket and then he jumps over and there's that cop. You know, with this big massive moustache, this huge built wrestler type cop. It's brilliant. It's such a cool ending to that scene. I'm glad I didn't pick After Hours because I was going to. And it was almost like, what scene do you pick from it? Because as you say, it's almost the culmination of all of these different sequences.
All these great female characters as well that he keeps jumping into. It's like Catherine O'Hara and Terry Garr and Rosanna Arquette and Linda Fiorentino.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
That was almost my pick as well, Kevin. It was so.
It's so good.
It is so good because I watched some making of documentaries for it, and you know, and Scorsese himself was talking about how you know he was definitely referencing a lot of Greek stories and going down the River Styx with the ferryman, and you know that sense of being out of control because he came from a place where his career was spiraling.
Last Temptation of Christ, wasn't it?
That he was trying to get that going in the early 80s and that fell through at the last minute and he really didn't know if he had a career in Hollywood anymore, and it came from that sense of frustration, that sense of feeling out of control, and this film was born.
And I think that vibe, that sort of headspace that he's in plays into the film where it's, you know, Definitely. Just hitting roadblock after roadblock and all these batshit oddball characters where in America, if you don't have money and you're reliant on the kindness of strangers, you're going to meet some weird characters because that's not how that country is set up to run.
There's also a joy in the film that you can sense through Scorsese, the joy of just making a film of it. I imagine it's sort of lower budget, it's more contained, you know, it's like he's done his kind of Oscar, he's done Raging Bull, he's, you know, Taxi Driver, and then it's just he lets loose. And you realize that he's just such a masterful filmmaker, but how masterful he would be in almost any genre, you know, and that if he wasn't the Oscar winning, you know, genius that he is, he could be making sort of incredible genre films like After Us. And I guess he's done that more in his sort of later career. Yeah. But the camera moves, the very first camera move when we just meet them in the office. I mean, who would think to start a film with that shot? You know, most people would start, you'd have a wide shot. I mean, he has the camera speeding across the whole office to find our protagonist. And he just has so much fun.
You assume it had to have been a Steadicam. That has to have been a Steadicam.
Yeah.
Must have been. It's like the Steadicam operator is Usain Bolt, and he's like sprinting around the stuff because it's moving so fast and it's such a kinetic energy. It's fantastic.
They were making it really quick and dirty, but they also had like technical problems that they had to sort of figure out, and the ingenuity of the time where if they were doing it now, it would be CG. But it's like when Linda Fiorentino throws the keys out the window and there's a point of view shot of the keys falling towards Griffin Dunn. And they were attempting to do that by sticking the camera onto a plank of wood and dropping the wood on a rope towards Griffin Dunn's face. And it kept moving out of focus. So, but they ended up with a crane in the end. But he just wanted to vent and get that out of his system. And it was a quick and dirty film, but it's so beautiful to look at, and I love the music as well.
Yeah.
I wasn't very happy living down in Tribeca. I had moved there thinking that that's where I belonged, in a way, because I came from downtown. But it's a very different downtown. It's bohemian. I was not from a bohemian area. I was more of an Italian-American area. It was very, very different. And I wasn't very happy. And so this film comes out of that. It comes out of a feeling of being stuck in the underworld and never being able to get out, maybe never being able to get to make another big film, in a sense. Or does one just continue? There's no such thing as a big film, it's just a film. And whether it's 20 million, 100 million, 5 million, 100,000, it's still got to sell emotions, it's got to sell ideas. So think about how you could sustain yourself creatively, and where's your stamina too? I just turned 40, so my stamina had to be there from the 15 or 20 years earlier. And so the film was designed completely while I was in my loft for about 1 week when I had bad cough, and Aida was on, and I was listening to it, and I would just design these shots, the storyboards, all of that sort of thing. And I tried a different form, which was actually notating it on the sides and the margins of the script in smaller drawings and notes and breaking it all down, but very, very, very precisely. Always with the feel of a satiric edge of a Hitchcock or a Lang movie where characters are always doomed by fate.
So, Adam, what was your pick then?
Well, luckily it wasn't After Hours. So I went for...
Because you would have ended up copying me.
And it was actually that scene was the one I was really thinking about because it's such a small scene.
Wow.
Sympathical.
But so I chose Warriors because it's masterful.
Hey.
Cool.
These are the armies of the night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
The Furies. The Boppers. And these are the Warriors.
We know about the Warriors. They're a heavy outfit.
They're from Coney Island.
Warriors? You guys are the big dudes, huh?
Now, they're in the Bronx.
We're going back.
27 miles behind enemy lines.
It's the only choice we got.
Between them and safety stand 20,000 cops. And 100,000 sworn enemies.
I want them all. I want all the Warriors.
And I watched it before shooting Night Teeth. I was surprised at how, I mean, it just, it, the look and feel of it, you know, it could,
oh, it's gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous. The techniques used are the same. I mean, that whole kind of, you know, the streets just glistening, you know, everything wet down, the neon light reflecting, the way that it's edited, the music, it just, it's so, it feels so modern. I mean, obviously there's elements of it that feel very much of its time. And one thing I really do question about it, I would really like to know is the gangs in it. Were they genuinely intimidating to people in the late 70s, or was it also sort of slightly comical? Because you look at them now, like the scene I'm going to pick just to give it away is the scene with the orphans. You know, and there's no way if you're walking down the street and you saw the orphans, you'd be like, oh shit, I better turn the other way. You'd just be like, what is, you know, but I wonder if at the time, was that capturing something, or was that always the case?
I guess it's the amount of them. Also, such grubby, dirty locations where you would just feel unsafe, just in general.
Who directed? So it was Walter Hill directed.
Walter Hill directed Warriors.
Rodan directed.
Yeah, and he, Streets of Fire, I think, was that directly after Warriors?
Podbot, when was that?
So Walter Hill directed The Warriors in 1979, followed by The Long Riders in 80, Southern Comfort in 81. 48 Hours in 82, and Streets of Fire in 84. That's some run of films, lads.
Oh, right.
Thanks, Podbot.
So those two films, I think, you know, work so well together because they've both got this kind of, they're slightly dystopian, but also very sort of realist versions of, you know, I mean, Warriors is New York. I can't quite remember what Streets of Fire, but that sort of neon lit, you know, grimy, but also sort of somehow weirdly appealing vision of the city at night. And I think what you were talking about earlier of you know, getting lost in the city, I think Warriors captures so well the city that you don't see. You know, you go to work, you go to bars, you go to restaurants, but there's this other element of the city that's, you know, in cinema is where, you know, it's crime ridden. it's where, you know. So, I mean, Warriors, I think, I mean, it's an incredible set up. It's such a great idea of all these gangs going to come together, you know, and then the guy who's doing the speech and trying to bring it all together is assassinated. And then this group, this gang called the Warriors, are blamed, and every gang in the city is then set upon them and they've got to get home. I mean, it's so simple and it's such a great setup, and it's so incredibly intense from the get-go. And there's just one sort of relentless chase sequence after the other. And there's this amazing moment just before the orphan scene where they're hiding and they're trying to get to the subway, and there's this bus driving up and down full of really angry gang members searching for them. And you have no idea, which is also something that a lot of these films do, you have no idea how they're going to get out of this situation, you know, how they're going to get from A to B. So you have these sort of relentless chase sequences and action sequences. And then it calms for a moment, and they arrive in this really quiet neighborhood, and they're walking through, and it's the last time that the full gang is together. So they go into this very, very quiet neighborhood, and then you look up, and on top of the buildings are gang members looking down to them, and you're just straight into a Western.
You've had it.
Yeah, I made them. Two there and one there.
I think they just made us.
You recognize them?
Orphans. So far down, they ain't even on the map. Real low class.
Numbers?
Full strength, maybe 30. 30's a lot more than 8.
Not if they're wimps. And I'm sick of this running crap.
And you've got this group waiting for them called the Orphans. And, you know, as I mentioned, they're sort of... The thing with the Warriors is because of the costumes, because of how sort of overly stylized it is, it's not a... It's not scary in the way that perhaps it might have been, or if it was more...
It feels like a comic
book.
Yeah,
it does.
Well, I suppose they've got those comic book interstitials in there, but it aside from that, it has that sort of pop.
It definitely does. And they did the director's cut where they did that even more, and they had all the transitions from the kind of animated imagery.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So they go and approach this group called the Orphans, and they have to negotiate just being able to walk to the subway through their neighborhood. And, you know, they have this great conversation, and it seems that they've got away with it. And then you just hear someone doing a chicken sound.
There's nothing wrong with you making it through our territory as long as you're coming in peace.
And you just know, oh shit, it's like someone throwing a grenade in. And you look around, and it's Diane Lane. Oh, and God. She just throws everything, you know.
Are you just going to let an army walk through here anytime they feel like it? How's it going to look?
Get lost.
And pretty soon every gang's just going to boogie right in. Soldier right through.
I'll tell you. It's a man you are.
And you just know that she's just demasculated these men immediately. You know, who are all, it's all posturing. It's all like, look how tough we are. And it's a very male film. And then she just comes and she just chucks this grenade in the middle of it and just ruins it. And it's like, you know, you've got you're watching between your fingers because you just know that everything's gone horribly wrong. And so now they have to front up to each other and the Warriors can't back down. You know, they have to take their shirts off, you know, their vests off in order to get to the subway and they refuse. and the Orphans now can't refuse because they've been called out. So you've got these guys who are just having to kind of carry on being macho because they don't want to be embarrassed in front of the girl. Yeah. And she loves it. She's playing with that. Yeah. So then they walk back and they're nearly at the tube and then they get surrounded at the subway, not the tube. And then they light this Molotov cocktail. And you think that he's going to throw this Molotov cocktail at the gang. But he throws it at the car.
You see what you get, Warriors? You see what you get when you mess with the Orphans? We're going to rain on you, Warriors!
And it's one of those moments where they all start to sort of run off, and, and then the car explodes and they manage to run for the subway. But it's just this incredible, and apart from the end, much quieter moment in the film that I just thought, watching it again, worked so well and captured the kind of essence of the city in such an interesting way.
It's a chase movie.
I think I remember reading in it that they actually did hire a gang of kids to protect their trucks and stuff like that when they were shooting. So they actually had a gang, a real life gang.
That was to stop them from robbing them.
Well, yeah, so the kids will pay us and we won't rob them. That was basically it.
And having the radio DJ narrating it, it's like these little strokes of absolute genius, you know. And it's so iconic. It's so, people who haven't even seen the film, there's just so many elements from it that you'd recognize.
But as you were describing it there, it's like, yeah, there's like a Western vibe going on here, but there's also a comic book element vibe, but it feels real. But it feels real. It feels totally, totally real, and the stakes are high and you're on edge, but it's gripping from the get-go.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Can I mention another one? But it's not my pick, and it's not my pick because it's more of a two-hander, and it's less of it's less exploring the city. It's not much of a travelogue. But it's Mikey and Nikki from Elaine May. Pierce mentioned that last week, and I just watched it recently.
Peter Falk is Mikey.
I got a terrific suggestion for you, Nick. I suggest you find somebody you can trust.
John Cassavetes is Nikki.
They're gonna kill me, Nick. They're gonna kill me.
Mikey and Nikki.
You are not gonna die.
On a night like this, there is no choice.
It's Peter Falk and John Cassavetes, and it's a fantastic film set over one night where two mob guys are having a really, really bad night. And if I was to pick a scene from that, it would be where the two guys end up coming to blows. They come to blows, and it begins with John Cassavetes breaking Peter Falk's watch. And it's just great to watch two guys have this really frustrating sort of argument with their pals, but they're also, they know how to piss each other off. And I'm sure you've all had those friends where it's like, well, you guys, you've got a brother, I suppose. Well, I imagine that I don't have a brother, so I imagine that it would be similar in that you just know how to wind each other up. And sometimes that's sort of the relationship you have, but you still like each other. And Lelaine May captures that so beautifully in that film, that frustrating sort of push and pull relationship that some guys will have.
Are you crazy? I call you, and you never call me back.
You don't call me. You haven't called me in months.
Yeah, because after 3 months you don't call me back, I don't call anymore. You don't even say hello to me. I walk into that restaurant, and you're sitting there with Dave Resnick and Sid Fine, and I got to say hello to you 3 times because I'm too embarrassed to walk away without an answer. And when I walk away, I hear you say, Jesus Christ. Call that guy back. I forgot to give him the order.
That was a joke.
That joke was for Resnick.
For you, not for Resnick. That's why I said it loud enough for you to hear it. That was a joke for you.
Yeah, man. Oh, great.
Well,
pick.
Before great, great we pick. Let you go, Adam, can I tell you what my best bit of your film is?
Yes. Please do.
This sounds like I'm setting you up, for a joke. No, it's actually the 7-Eleven scene. I think that's a cracking moment. And, yeah, it's got tension,
so cool.
It's got flirtation, it's got jokes, and it's just a great moment in a really, really fun film. And as we say, it's out right now. You can go watch it on Netflix. And here's a trailer.
Hey, driver.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's play a game. What would you do if you knew tonight was your last night on Earth?
Wow, I'm a pretty chill guy. I just live with my brother. I go to school.
Come on, driver. Last night on Earth, drugs, women, men, old enemies. You're just waiting to pop.
I'd definitely kill you.
Finally, he bites back. We're hitting every single one of these parties tonight, and you need to get to the last stop by morning.
Wow, Kevin.
Wow.
And Adam. That we really covered One Night in the Big City. But I think, you know, actually when we discussed all that, I'm delighted with the, I think, you know, three great films that kind of captured that that topic quite well. But we have to get on to the kind of the closing business of the show, which is we need to figure out what in the hell we're going to do next week.
And because next week is going to come right before Halloween, I have sort of pared the wheel down into just genre and horror topics so we can get one that will sort of fit in nicely for Halloween. And Adam, I've sent you the app, so if you could do us the honours of spinning it.
Okay,
let me
we'll
know
do.
What I'm doing next week. Here we go.
Okay, spinning.
Here we go. I can hear
spinning.
Yeah, and usually we send people a physical wheel, so this week we're just sending you the electronic app. It's just shipping and delivery was just too expensive.
Yeah, Tom Moore held on to it.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay, so it is best jump scare.
Ooh, very good.
Okay, good. That'll work. That's quite a broad one because there's so many jump scares in... Are there any jump scares in Night Teeth? I need to watch the film. I've not seen it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, you know what? There's one. And there's definitely one with the... hopefully it's a jump scare with the window smash right near the beginning. I don't want to say
it won't be a jump scare
if I explain it. But yeah, you know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a genuine jump scare.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Okay.
That can be your best... There's your best jump scare.
That's it. It's done. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
With Adam.
Oh, we
Adam, seriously, thank you so much for coming on. I really do recommend Night Teeth. It is a good fun time. It's not too scary. It was like, you know, think of, it's just a great one night in the big city with vampires.
And I think the cast, the three leads of the film, are going to have quite substantial careers. So get in there early and have a look. But listen, Adam, thanks a million, man.
Thank you.
We know you're absolutely up the walls promoting the film and so busy. So thanks for making time for us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And wait, before we let you go, where can people find you, Adam?
For a moment, I was like, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. You can find me in North London, just sort of walking around often on the phone.
This is what happens when people don't listen to the podcast. Yeah.
It's
more that I'm really bad at the self-promotion social media thing. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Not that I do much on Twitter or Instagram, frankly, but I'm on there. So look me up.
It's at Ad Randall. Am I right?
Yes.
And you can also find us on Twitter at Best Bits Pod. And we'll be back next week.
And please remember to give us a like. And give us 5 stars on Apple or iTunes and all that sort of stuff. And if you give us a review, then all the better, because that's what helps, you know, push us up the algorithm tricks the algorithm to push us up the charts.
Boom boom, back next week.
The Best Bits Podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scene suggestions, or just want to get in touch with us, email us at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Play dumb and stupid.
Two fun guys. Two fun guys.
Kevin and Will.
So what's the story, Kevin? It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. You've got news. Tell us your news. Hello, everybody. This is Kevin, and I'm joined by Will, and this is Minibit 72, just in case we didn't say so. I wonder what theme tune I'll put at the beginning of this. I've recorded so many of them. I usually just take my pick when I go for the...
Right.
So I go for the egotistical one, or the epic one, or the 80s synthwave one, or the cowboy and western one. We'll see. Depends on the mood of this mini bit.
Okay. I'm looking forward to hearing which one it is. I'm curious because you said to me, you've got news.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, what fucking news do I have?
You nearly died during the week. That is pretty monumental.
There it is. There's me dying right there on mic. Yeah, I almost died. Yeah, I almost died.
Because of the Discord.
It was the Discord, yeah. It was the Discord's fault.
What happened? Tell me what happened. Because we haven't actually spoken in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Since the Irish recording, the Irish episode recording, we haven't been on mic together. Do you want to talk about this? We can cut it out if you want to.
I do want it to be at the front of, you know, the way we have this, you know, the tag.
We'll save that.
So I'll talk about it later. I'll talk about it later in the episode. You know, we can talk about something else, but I'm quite happy to talk about it later for our special people.
Okay. Well, listen, I saw these questions on TikTok
during the last few weeks. And I thought, those are good questions. I'm going to make a note of them. I'm going to ask Will some of them. So I've got about five of them here. They're quite philosophical.
Okay.
And maybe if I ask you one as the teaser of this episode, and then we can pepper out the other one. Right. See how you get on.
Okay.
So give me from one to five, a number from one to five.
Go. Let's go. Let's go five. Let's go all five.
Question five. If you could, would you rather spend a day with your younger self or your older self? Take your time.
No.
It's live radio.
This is a Back to the Future question.
Right? Is it?
Am I talking to my older self and my older self going, hey kid, bet on the Sox?
Would you sooner meet up with your older self and get the wisdom of your older self to say to you what you probably need to hear now, which is get a shift on, get a wiggle on? Or would you sooner go back to your younger self and say, listen, that thing that you're worried about or that thing that you don't do and you should have done, you know, give him a pointer or some sort of a steer. So it's whether you want
is
the steer
it going to work
or do you
out?
Want to give your younger self a steer. Forgetting about the ramifications and the consequences. Forget all the sort of the grandfather paradox. For those that don't know what the grandfather paradox is, go back to our time travel episode.
Yeah. All right. I think I'll go back to my younger self, right? And I'll say, you know, I'll ask my younger self, come here, what's the big worry? What are you worried about? And
you should know that.
But I'm
don't
going to
you
ask,
remember what you're worried about?
But the specific thing, because I worry about so many things. You know, we all worry about various different things, you know, from, you know.
Losing your Spider-Man shoes.
Yes. I'm going to go, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because
it'll
guess
be good
what?
Content.
Next week, you're going to have Batman. You're going to have Batman willies.
Also,
right?
In the future, there's a thing called a podcast. And you'll be able to tell people what happened to your Spider-Man shoes on the podcast.
Exactly. It's all the bad shit that's happening to you will be, it's filling you up and it will be good content. That's all it is. All that embarrassing stuff that you do is going to be all right as long as you don't be too much of a prick and just stay the course. That's kind of it.
I'd be the opposite.
No, I think I would have a nice little sit down.
You'd have what? A nice shit?
I'd have a nice sit down and a nice little chat with myself. That's what I would do. How would you do? You're saying you would do the opposite.
I'd do the opposite. I'd want to speak to my future self because I can enact whatever they tell me. So I can, you know, live in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know. I'd like foresight. Tell me what is coming towards me or what I need to be aware of. And I will make the change now because I can. Going back to my younger self, I would just be unburdening my younger self. And then, I don't know, hoping that that would change the course of my life. But I'm very happy with my life. I think everything's turned out fantastic. So I wouldn't want to risk changing anything. So, yeah.
Honestly, that was my first thought as well. I was like going, yeah, I want all the information my older self can give me. And but I was like, I'll go back and I'll kind of help my younger self out a little bit.
When you hit 65, your prostate is going to blow up like a basketball.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk to my older self because what if my oldest self is 37? You know, I only live, you know, another 2 years. I obviously, by saying that, I'm implying I'm 35 right now.
I was going to say, I was like getting confused there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I said I needed to put some clarity on that one. I would be afraid for my older self to come back and my older self go come back and I see the state of him and I go, oh shit, just one look at my older self and go, oh fuck no.
Listen, I just had the camera angled wrong there when I turned on the webcam here and that's already rattled me. I'm like, oh God.
You should never have the camera pointed at your balls, Kevin. Never, ever, ever, ever.
That's how I make
your
a living.
Balls.
$5.99 a month. Well, listen, that'll do as a teaser.
Yes, go on.
Thank you to everybody that's listened to the latest episode, which we haven't recorded yet. And I hope it was a good episode because I have no fucking clue what I'm going to talk about on that episode. But we've already done it now because you've heard us talking about it. But also, this might be one of the random episodes. So this is the Patreon. We do the mini bits. Come along. They're great episodes. We're going to keep talking, though. See ya.
Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that.
Bye.